Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Ryan.
Hi. Hi.
For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary movement about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. Sorry. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are finishing up step 9. I'm going to read a few paragraphs, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each reading. And tonight we have John and Debbie with us. Debbie,
actually,
I'm so sorry. Judy.
All right.
I was running late. I'm a little discombobulated right now. I apologize.
You're fine.
All right. So, without further ado, we're going to start on page 80. And step 9 states, make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So, first paragraph is, the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or near a pool of it for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with a girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him.
So, who would like to begin? John? Judy?
I'm Judy, alcoholic.
Hey, Judy.
I'm glad everybody's here tonight. I'm a member of Simple Actions Group. My sobriety date's October 7th, 1986. And I say that because it may seem like I know a lot, and I don't know much. This is a continuous program. I mean, it's a way of life. It's not something you come in and straighten out and get everything in the right box and then go on and take the reins back and live your own life, which is what I thought I was coming here for. but it didn't turn out that way. When I came here, I was really not all that interested in stopping drinking, but I really wanted all the crap to stop that was happening. And I also was terrified that the next drink I took, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I was going to go into a blackout, if I was going to come home, or if somebody was going to find me someplace that I didn't intend to be. And why that scared me at that particular moment in time, I can't explain that. Except to say that I believe that there's a power greater than us that makes decisions about, has a plan, I'll say this, has a plan and a purpose for my life. I've always believed that, or at least thought it in my head. I don't know that I really believed it, because if I had believed it, I would have been living differently. So my faith didn't work. And we have a faith that does work, so that's why this is so different than what you may have tried in the past. So when I got here, I had absolutely no support from anybody around me. My husband didn't think I was an alcoholic because he was my drinking, you know, I was his drinking partner. So this was very bad news for him. And my family didn't think I was alcoholic because they didn't know what was going on. And in fact, he didn't know what was really going on because I was very good at covering things up. And in truth, what was happening to me was it was all coming unraveled and I couldn't keep it covered up. And a friend of mine suggested that I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. This friend happened to be one of my best drinking partners. And she thought that you guys could help me. And I didn't want to be here. I did not like the people. I did not think that I arrived somewhere that I wanted to be when I came here. And you'll hear different people's experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that's opposite of that. It wasn't my experience. And I say that to you because if I can get sober, anybody can get sober. Because I absolutely despise this place. The only thing I knew was that I didn't have anywhere else to go. I had no other answers. For the first time in my life, I was out of answers. So, and there was something peculiar about you guys. I later found out how peculiar, but never mind. The peculiar thing was your eyes. That's all I can tell you. I don't know what you said to me. I really can't remember meeting topics or what happened. I remember two things. People's eyes looked very different than mine. And I actually went home from the meeting that day and looked in the mirror to see if my eyes looked like that, and I didn't know. And they didn't. So that kept me coming back. And then the other thing that kept me coming back was I was sitting in the room one night and, you know, doing this, because I did this for a while. Do I really belong here? And they said, usually people don't wind up here by accident. And and then this man said, you're not going to find what you're looking for at the bottom of that bottle. And I thought, how did he know I was looking for something? So that really pulled me in, because I thought, that guy said five words and he knows exactly who I am. So that's why I stayed, not because I liked it, because there was somebody here who knew who I was and what I was doing, and I could finally relax. So I just tell you that to disqualify myself for sitting at this table. So just to get on with the ninth step, they talk about this in this paragraph about problems in a marriage. And that's really circumstantial. What we're talking about here is when you live with an alcoholic, because I'm totally incapable of forming a relationship or a partnership with another human being, anybody who lives with me is going to get resentful uncommunicative, etc. And they're going to be looking for something else. Because if I'm, one, not getting my way, and two, you're not doing what I want you to do, and three, I may not have quite the amount of alcohol that I want to drink, I am just really not a person you can live with. And that was who I was. And that was what I had to amend, not so much by direct, like an apology, but by living different, by surrendering to this process, having myself transformed into somebody who somebody could live with. You know, I've often, John and I have had this conversation about, I can remember being new in sobriety and being in my house and my husband talking to me and my daughter talking to me, and I can't hold on to what they're saying, because I cannot be present to the moment. My mind is going 50 miles an hour in 10 different directions. And they would ask me 5 minutes after they told me something, I had no idea what they had said to me. And I wasn't even drunk. I mean, I'm trying to get sober at that point. So that tells you the condition that I came here in and the condition that I've had to recover from to be able to function in the world.
John.
Thank you, Judy. Hi, I'm John, an alcoholic.
John.
I'm still not present quite a bit, Judy, now that I mention it. Really glad to be here. This was my first home group. I got sober with you guys here in this room. In fact, I think it started on David's couch when the meeting was about three people. I thought it was really weird that there was meetings in people's houses. But now I'm really glad to be here. It's interesting, I moved to Richmond about 6 months ago, and it likely is a God thing, but a speaker that had come here at Simple Actions maybe a year or so ago, loved the meeting so much, he took the format up there and started a meeting called Northside Steps, and the opening remarks are, this meeting is modeled after the Simple Actions group in Norfolk, Virginia. So I made that my home group. It's a home away from home, but I'm really glad to be here with you guys. My sobriety date is June 27th, 2012. And, you know, another God thing is I happen to be speaking at my home group tomorrow, and it's part two of step 8-9. I don't know how that happened, because this was 2 months ago, and I was really excited when David asked me to come speak. And I've got a lot of stuff going on right now that's just perfect for this step, so I think it is a God thing, because, you know, every time I think it's not, you know, it just gets thrown back in my face. And I'm here for a reason, and these things are happening for a reason, and it's great. Although I don't think it's great when it's happening. You know, it starts off with, chances are that we have domestic troubles. You know, that was kind of reassuring when I first read that, because, you know, again, it's like everything else, I'm not the only one. I'm not unique. And everybody else is going through similar experiences or has, and I get an opportunity to learn from their experiences. And I've got a lot of stuff to share on some of the readings as we go forward, but my favorite part of this paragraph is really the last sentence, where it says, a man so involved often feels very remorseful at times. That's me. Especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. And I'm one of those guys, probably on a weekly basis, I get divorced in my head. If there's something better somewhere else. There's a better job. There's a better girl. There's a better state to live in. I really want to go to Alaska. A lot of you guys heard me talk about that before. But, you know, I've got a wife and family that they've gone through hell for me. My wife has put up with a lot. She put up with a lot while I was drinking, and she's put up with just as much in my sobriety, you know, because I'm an alcoholic, and it never changes, and I do this very imperfectly, and she gets to see a lot when I'm not doing it as well or as good and hard as I should be doing it. So it's extremely selfish and sick of me to get divorced in my head on a weekly basis. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'm selfish at the core, so I forget about, you know, my wife and my family, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they're enduring, you know, and my road of sobriety. And you know, I'm constantly consumed with how I feel and my experience and how they're affecting me and not others. It was great. I was having this conversation with a buddy on the way down here, really about, you know, spouses and what must be going through their minds at you know, different phases of getting sober and being sober and just being a alcoholic nut job, you know. So, you know, yeah, I've had experiences that this whole paragraph and frankly this step touch on. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't be here without the support of my wife. Help me see through this and continues to. And it's not always an easy road for her. I like to think about how tough it is for me, but you know, she's in this with me daily. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 81. It says, whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take.
Okay, so my experience is I got to be on the other side of this. As a sober person, and what I had to learn about that was my early sobriety was so I was so debilitated. I really couldn't do anything but go to AA meetings, and couldn't participate in my marriage at all, and. And this happened to me. And when it was happening, of course, I thought I was the victim of something, but I thank God had a sponsor on the other end of the phone saying, you're not the victim. What meeting did you go to this week? I don't want to hear about what he's doing. And thank God, because you know, he did what he did as a result of having no foundation in anything but himself, and being married to somebody that's just can't, there's no possibility for having a relationship, there's just not. And so once AA came into my life, I got so focused on AA because I was in such a terrible condition. I really couldn't focus on any, I couldn't do anything but come here. And I just wasn't, we weren't given the time to work that out. That's just the way I look at it now and see it now. This is exactly the way it was supposed to happen. And I'm fine with it. But I do understand that no matter what side of this equation you're on, there's responsibility in the behavior and what you're willing to do. And honestly, a lot of the things that the people who were trying to help me in AA that they told me to do, I found extremely difficult to do. Because when I stopped drinking, what I really found out about myself was I was so cut off emotionally from myself, from you, and from God. It took me about 2 years to even start to wake up a little bit. So this has been a very long road for me. I didn't recover quick. I'm not perfect, but I really do understand. I don't have any resentment, no grudges. I don't feel like I was done wrong, and that is the miracle of these steps, because if I didn't have this path I was walking, I would be eaten up with resentment over that whole debacle, you know. And what I know today is he did exactly what he was able to do, and I did exactly what I was able to do, and it ended the way it ended. So The message of hope in Alcoholics Anonymous is that no matter what your present circumstances, there really is hope. There's somebody sitting in the seat, maybe right next to you, who can help you walk through whatever you're facing. And they did help me walk through, and what they did was they kept me alive. You know, when I forget what anniversary it was, I said to my sponsor, "Well, it's my whatever it was, I can't remember." And she said, "Good, you didn't drink and you didn't die." And, you know, that was really the truth. So I could have killed him. I won't say I didn't think about it. Yeah. I was driving around the streets of Norfolk trying to go to, I'm thinking about going to Bob's Gun Shop. And because I knew where she lived and I knew where he was, and I'm all wrapped up in this. I'm picking the phone up and calling my sponsor, and she's saying, "You know, will you stop driving around down there? Go home, for God's sakes." So thank God she was willing to walk through, just let me have my experience and walk through that with me. And everything that I learned and knew about staying sober up until that time, this happened when I was about 6 years without a drink. Really held me in good stead. So I say that for this reason. No matter what condition you happen to be in, if you're sitting in the seat tonight, no matter what you think is, you know, mountain you're facing, we can help you stay alive long enough until you can take care of it. That's pretty much what we can promise you. We can promise you don't ever have to drink again, you don't ever have to feel the way you're feeling today, and that there is a solution, and it's permanent.
All right, thanks, Judy. This is an important paragraph on a number of levels, and a lot of these things did apply to me in my experience. I had infidelities. I was unfaithful. Granted, I would always stipulate in my mind that, you know, these weren't affairs or anything, but, you know, just things that randomly happened when I had too much to drink, and it was the alcohol's fault. But it's really interesting how delicate it tells you to go about this, and thank God I went through these steps with a sponsor before I ever made amends with my wife or anybody else. But it talks about, you know, it specifically says, if we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we've been wild, should we tell her in detail? My sponsor and I talked about this at great length, and the way my amends went with my wife is that I was wild in a general way, and we talked about a lot of stuff, and that part of it was left there. The interesting thing is, I think I just mentioned that we moved recently. My wife was unpacking about a month ago. I made the rookie mistake that you guys told me about in these rooms, and my fourth step was laying around. Somehow, it fell out of a box and opened to my fear and sex inventory. In any event, you know, human nature took over, and I was at work, and I got a phone call, and immediately I was flipping out. And this whole thing is about me, not her. I mean, I was losing my mind. I mean, I'm calling my sponsor, I'm calling other people, nobody's answering. I immediately sent a text to my sponsor. It literally said, you know, my wife just found my fear and sex inventory. She read the whole thing. She knows about all my infidelities. Please call me. 5 seconds later, I get a text back. It was, you just sent this to your wife. So it just gets better and better. You know, and I'm uncomfortable. I am flipping out. But, you know, instantly I'm making this about me. I'm physically ill. I don't even know what to do with myself. And it's been an interesting ride the last few weeks. I did finally get off the couch a couple days ago. But, you know, fortunately I was able to talk to my sponsor and a couple other guys in the program. And what's amazing is, as usual, a lot of those guys have had the same experience, and their experience was really helpful in me to to calm down and see things straight. You know, this isn't about me. It's about my wife. And yeah, I get on my AA sober high horse. I've been sober 2 years and 3 months. And she's thinking, I don't give a rip. To me, you just cheated on me, you know? Like, and I don't care if it was years ago, it just happened. And I've got to understand that. I even tried to get drawn into the debate. You know, she said, you had affairs. Like, well, what's the definition of an affair is, you know, I really had to to dig out. And I'm living amends right now, daily. And I can't expect everything to be all right all of a sudden. You know, in her mind, this happened right now. She's been lied to, just like all the other lies about my drinking and everything else. And, you know, the rest of this paragraph talks about her wanting details. It played out the exact same way the book and you guys told me it would. And, you know, I talked to my sponsor for a while, and I took the suggestions of the book. And I said I don't have the right to bring other people and details into this, and that sounds horrible. And she says, I don't care about your book, I don't care about your program, I want to know. And it was difficult. It was really difficult, that's all I can say. But I'm coming out the other side, and I'm lucky, you know. Again, my wife's gone through hell and back, and she's in hell. But she's, just the other day, she thanked me for staying sober and doing this. Like, I don't need that. I mean, it's, again, about me. You know, I'm patting myself on the back, and she's going through this stuff. So, yeah, I'm real deep in this stuff right now, which is probably why God has me speaking on this tonight and tomorrow night. So I will leave it at that on that reading.
Thank you. Page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he's yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Mom. Ain't it grand if the wind stopped blowing?"
Well, I do. That's my favorite part of that statement. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? I don't see anything the matter here. You know, that's what I always want to do that. I have to be goaded into doing the right thing. I wish I could tell you I was more virtuous than that, but I'm not. So this is how I've amended this. You know, my daughter is 31 now and has her own son, and she's married and has a great life, which was everything that I really wanted for her, because I knew I was incapable of really providing it. So I'll tell you what I did the whole time I was trying to get sober, raise her, join the human race, and not blow my brains out, I let other people really help me with taking care of her. I just surrendered that. And that was the thing that the people that were helping me told me to do. They said, the less time you spend with her, the better. And I thought that was, you know, initially pretty cruel, but the reality was they could see exactly the condition I was in, and they knew that if I could just spend a little bit of time with her and just be focused on her, because I had an attention span of about 30 seconds, that would be better than anything else I could do. So I did what they told me to do, because I didn't think I could. As I said, I was out of answers, and I really had a lot of hope. I had a lot of deep respect for my intellect. So for me to be out of answers was a huge experience for me.
and I was very scared. I was afraid of drinking, I was afraid of dying, and I was afraid of what was going to happen to this little girl if I didn't do exactly what they told me to do. So I did exactly what they told me to do. And she grew up and has had a great life, and is having a great life, and is a great human being, and has a host of friends. She's everything that you know, we all want to try to be when we grow up. So today, what I have, as I've come back, you know, the pieces have been put together, my insides have been put back together. I'm very attentive to her, and I also let her call the shots. If she wants me involved, I get involved. If she doesn't, I don't push my way in. I've had boot camp training on how to be a parent from people who loved me in this program. So they taught me how to love her, how to let her be herself, how to be engaged and not overbearing, how to be supportive. And I've overstepped the bounds a few times, and I've had to make amends for that. But honestly, this was the most important, has been the most important thing I've done here. And if, you know, if I died tomorrow, I'd be perfectly happy that I had been able to participate in something bigger than myself. And I was able to do what I was told. It's a terrible thing to not be able to take direction or follow direction or let somebody help you. You know, I couldn't do that until I got here. My ass was on fire, basically.
Thanks.
Thanks, Judy. You know, this is this rang true for me that, you know, first moment of sobriety, and it still does today. You know. Where it says, but he's a long way, you know, it's talking about certainly an alcoholic must keep sober for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom he has so shockingly treated. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, and I don't see it. I didn't see any of this until I actually went through these steps with a sponsor. You know, all I cared about was getting wasted. I was good at it, and I liked it. I liked it a lot until it wasn't working, and it was blatantly obvious I had no choice in the matter anymore. So I took a bunch of drinks that I really wanted, and then I took twice and then I never wanted. And the reality of it is, I didn't have a choice from the first drink. But, and I can honestly say, you know, it said, had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. I'm one of those guys, man, I'd have been dead in a ditch if it weren't for my wife and my family. And at times, it seemed like a very antagonistic thing. You know, leave, you're losing your family if you don't stop drinking, things like that. That pissed me off. but it's amazing just how short-sighted and self-centered I was. And I didn't see any of this. I mean, if it had been a movie, everybody in the audience would have seen the opposite of my perspective. But, you know, I'm so wound up in me that I don't see it. And Judy mentioned she loved it. I love this too. In fact, I was reading this out loud with my wife last night. You know, the alcoholics are like a tornado roaring its way through the life of others. Hearts are broken. And then don't say the matter here, my ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing. I mean, I want, just like everything, like when I came in these rooms, I wanted you guys to show me how to stop drinking like that. And I wanted to move on. You know, I'm sober for a day. I want you to see that, okay? And I want to move on. I want, you know, relationship's good. It's all good. Thanks, John. And it doesn't work that way, unfortunately for me. You know, this is a long path, but it's an awesome one. And it's a hell of a lot better than it was when I was drinking. You know, are there bumpy times? Yeah. I'm in the middle of one, but it's all right. It's so much better. And, you know, it's another reminder to me that, you know, this isn't about me. You know, this is about everyone else around me and staying present. You know, Judy and I have talked about it a number of times. You know, I was drunk most nights with my family. I didn't remember anything my kids were saying to me or the conversations I was having with them or my wife. And now, not drinking sober, I find that is the case a lot more because I'm still not present. I'm thinking, you know, constantly going. And I have to take a moment. Usually I recognize what's going on. I'll excuse myself and go to the bathroom. I'll kneel and say a prayer just to calm it down. Because that's where I'm going to be of the most use, especially to my kids. Being an active parent involved in the conversation they're trying to have with me, it really is quite simple. Yet it's so difficult for me. But, you know, this is just, it's a work in progress. And we're going to have, you know, sometimes it's going to be one step forward, two steps back. Kind of doing that right now. But, you know, it's just profoundly better than it was a couple of years ago. And it only gets better the more and more I do this. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. All right, page 83. It says, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses the desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
Yeah, so this is not an overnight matter. We don't clear this up quickly, nor do we do it by ourselves. You know, this prayer, there's a long, long period of reconstruction ahead. And at the bottom of that paragraph, it says, our Creator shows us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. And I'm still doing this with my ex-husband. And unfortunately, the poor guy can't get sober. It's really very sad. He's really tried, but he can't grab on. And I, you know, every so often he reaches out and talks to me a little bit. And I just remember that I'm the only example he really has, and we've really mended the relationship over that. He was so amazed. He didn't see me for years and years, and he was so amazed when he saw me at our daughter's wedding that he it piqued his interest enough, and this is the way AA works, that piqued his interest enough to call me in a moment of desperation and ask me for help, which, if you knew him, that's not normal that he would call me and ask me for help, you know? So we got an opportunity to really really talk, and, you know, I continue to try to help him, but I know it's really beyond me. I can't help him. So I pray for him a lot, and I have other people praying for him. And there was a time in my sobriety when I was kind of on the ledge, and people that were around me were asking my sponsor, what are we going to do? What's wrong with her? And, you know, so she said to all of them to pray for me, and it worked. So I came out of that dark time and transformed and really grabbed on, and I made it past that milestone. And that was like in my seventh year, I think it was. I was just, when my life came apart and got recreated, I was really, really lost, and I got saved from other people praying for me. And if you're sitting in this room tonight and you're new, there are all kinds of people praying for you. I just want you to know. Maybe the guy sitting next to you.
because we pray for each other all the time. I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah, the first time I went through this, reading it out loud with my sponsor, I stopped at that second sentence. It says, a remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. I'd like to think that my sorry is very articulate and well thought out, and my delivery is going to make it all good, and he just stopped me right there. He's like, I don't care what you think. I don't care how well you're prepared to say it. You know, you've said, I'm sorry, a million times. Just empty promises. And that's the truth. I mean, I would be sick of it. I wouldn't have stuck around for half the I'm sorry's that I was doing. Sorry for getting wasted again. Sorry that you have to babysit me. I'm sorry I did this. I'm sorry I drank. I'm sorry I'm drunk. It's just unbelievable. But I meant every single one of them. And she needs to understand that. I meant all those I'm sorry's, and this one I mean most of all. You know, it's like convincing myself I'm not going to do it again. I really mean it, but you know, it's empty promises. So once that was pointed out to me, I got a little bit different perspective. And it goes down to that living a spiritual life. It's not a theory. You know, I came in here with a chip on my shoulder about the whole God word and the God thing, and you cult members weren't going to convert me to whatever it is you guys were preaching. But once I opened my brain enough just to allow some different perspectives in, I mean, I say prayers like that every morning. You know, thy will, not mine. You know, where can I be helpful? And show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. You know, it's certainly been shown to me a lot more than I've shown it to other people, especially my family. Again, it sounds so simple, yet it's not me. It's not my default. Then I need to do this. I need to say that prayer all the time. It also talks about unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. I've tried that. I've tried to talk to my wife like she's in the program with us, like she's one of us, and it doesn't matter if my wife or any other person is not an alcoholic. It doesn't make sense. I think the last time I did that, you know, I thought we were making a breakthrough. I was telling her exactly how I was feeling and thinking, and she paused for a moment, and she was dead serious, said she thought I need to go to a doctor and get some help, get some drugs. I mean, it just sounded insane. But that's the beauty of you guys in these rooms and this program is, you know, I can't hear anything. A doctor can say what you guys are saying to me. I'm not going to listen. He's an idiot. He just wants my $50 copay. But you guys say it's brilliant. It's genius. It's unbelievable. It's the whole, you know, premise behind one alcoholic identifying with another. And that's why this works. But I do have to live a spiritual life. I got to worry about what I'm doing. You know, I don't need to press my thoughts or beliefs or opinions on other people. You know, I came in here when I got really into it. I was waving the book at my family. And it's just nonsense. Just nonsense. It says they will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. I'm sorry, it just doesn't cut it. But the living amends that Judy was talking about, that's what repairs the damage. And hopefully, you know, I've got family members who've been in these rooms before, and they're not anymore, and God willing, I hope they end up back here. But this is the best thing I can do, is to live the spiritual life to the best of my ability. It ain't gonna be perfect or pretty. But if I can do that, then maybe that's an experience that they want to have. Maybe it's not in my control. I can't worry about it. But I need to do these living amends, and that's going to go a lot further than I'm sorry, no matter how beautiful I think it sounds. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, over, continuing on page 83. Since there may be some wrongs we can never fully right, we don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen, we send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
So this is the paragraph that really tells us that we better be certain about what we're doing and really clear about what the amends, what we're making amends for. And I had one person that I could not contact because before I even got here, she said, do not ever speak to me again. I don't want to ever see you again or talk to you or hear about you or anything. So I took that as I shouldn't contact her. So I didn't. But, you know, I would amend that if I would do a direct amends if I could. So I still have to amend it. So I'm not going to give you the gory details about that, but you have imagination. So this is a girl that was a good friend of mine. So what does every drunk woman do with her best friend? Sleep with her husband or her boyfriend or something. So I don't do that anymore. That's how I amend that. And but I mean, that sounds funny, but honestly, that is how you amend that. And stop living like that. And I stopped living like that a long, long time ago. And boy, it sure is a lot easier living without having all that mess going on. So I'm going to leave it at that. I've never had any, I'll just say that I've never had any, I always felt confident when I was doing an amends. If I wasn't ready and confident about it and knew what I was going to say, then I wasn't ready. That's what I've been, the way I've been taught in AA. So I know exactly what I'm going to say and what my purpose is, and I take care of it. And I've never felt maybe a little scared at the initial approach, but in the process of doing it, I've never felt like I shouldn't be there, or oh, I can't stand this, or I hope this is over soon, or whatever. It really has been a great experience to do, and I've done it in letters and face-to-face and indirectly by committing to be different, you know. And it talks in our literature about that a lot. Thanks.
Thanks.
You know, some of this paragraph I personally don't have experience with, where it says there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. I'm sure there are, but I don't have anybody in my current fourth step that needs to be hidden that I can't approach. However, where I do have experience is, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. I'm a delayer. I don't like to do things that are uncomfortable, and I've got one right now that I should have made amends to a year ago, and I still haven't. And to be honest with you, I think it would probably go just fine. It's just fear, and I'm uncomfortable. I've talked about this amends with a few people in this room. We've even set up, you know, we were going to meet up for coffee once a month and encourage each other to make those amends. And I miss those coffees. So I have experience with that. But I will tell you, I have made a few of those that I really delayed. And it was incredible. You know, we don't do this for unselfish reasons, but there was an enormous sense of relief. And then the experience was really helpful to pass along to other folks. And they didn't go anywhere close to the way I thought they'd go. I actually had to go make amends to the dean of the first college I went to that I got kicked out of. scared. I was sitting there in the dean's office sweating bullets in a coat and tie. There's students next to me. They've obviously, they're there for, you know, real reasons. And the guy couldn't have been more amazing. Couldn't have been more amazing. And I was so filled with fear, I put it off forever and ever and ever. And he took my card and asked if he could share my story. And it was incredible. But it says, don't delay. And all I can tell you, you know, I am still delaying on one of them. But on the others that I did delay on, it was just amazing to get through it, get over it, and move on and not carry that baggage. Because, you know, the one I'm not making right now that I think is so awkward and fearful and difficult, I think about it every day. I think about it every day, and I guarantee that person's not thinking about me every day. I guarantee it. So that's my experience there.
Thank you. We're going to finish up on page 83. If we are painstaking about the space of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will suddenly intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Okay, so this is not a poof. You don't get poofed and then you're that. This is a read it every day and try to participate thing. So it's almost really, we call it the promises and we read it a lot of AA meetings, but I really look at it as a way to take my inventory in a sense, because if I'm not experiencing a new freedom and a new happiness, why not? And am I regretting the past or wishing to shut the door on it? And if I am, why is that happening? So it's a really great list of, this is the condition that this step should give you. And not that, as I said, it's a poof thing. You do have to participate in it on a daily basis. It's not something that just happens to you and then you're all good. But it is a great way to, it's a great measuring stick. There's a lot of measuring sticks in this book, and I think it's a great one. It's all in the same place. Fear of people and economic insecurity. Yeah, that's my favorite one. And sometimes what I know is that I play with these things. You know, this is the self-centeredness. Take it out and go, I think I'm going to be fearful of my economic situation today. And, you know, so this is how we get distracted, or how I get distracted with my life and forget what I'm really doing here, which is to be available to you. This isn't, you know, God didn't straighten me up and get me sober and have these transforming experiences so I can sit at home and think about my economic insecurity. So, you know, I got to remind myself of that. Okay.
Thanks. The yeah, the promises are read in just about every meeting that I go to on a regular basis. And, you know, Judy's right. It's not the poof thing. As much as I want it, I just wish it would be like that, because I want relief. I want relief from whatever I'm fearing, whatever I'm feeling. I just want it to be over. I want to move on and forget about the past. But I would say that that's actually the coolest part of this, or the one I've experienced the most, is where I begin not to regret the past and I wish to shut the door on it. You know, it took me a while to realize, and I still realize all the time, you know, things that happen that I think are bad, you know, I'm not the person that's equipped to judge any of that. They're just experiences. That's all they are. They may not feel good to me at the time, but they've been incredibly helpful, and they will become helpful. You know, this wife finding my fourth step thing is going to be helpful down the line. You know, and it was amazing because I was able to talk to somebody, the exact same thing happened to them, and it saved my life at that moment. So, you know, if I can take an experience that I really regret or wish to shut the door on and use it the same way it's been provided to me, that's incredible. I mean, that's, and to not constantly have to be turning my back and hiding from everybody and everything that I feel like I've destroyed. You know, because that fear was there. I mean, even down to, you know, you wake up the morning after, you look at your phone, you're like, oh, God, I called them, texted them. You know, just the constant fear of everything I did. You know, and I still do, to be quite honest with you. I'm an alcoholic, and I still do things that aren't right, aren't good, and I need to set them straight. And I still have to take an inventory and do this. But it's a heck of a lot more peaceful now. I mean, I never knew what was going to come out of the woodwork and get me when I was really in this thing. And now I do have an enormous sense of peace and serenity relative to the way I felt 2.5 years ago before I came in these rooms. But I don't know, I think we're at the end here. It was great to be back. If you're new in these rooms, I think there are some new folks, just keep coming back with an open mind and just listen, you know. I thought I was smart and didn't really need a sponsor or these steps. I kind of did the steps in my head every time I came to these rooms. And I crashed and burned after about 30 days. So I was willing to take some direction, which is what Judy referenced earlier. And taking direction is what has saved my life. So thanks for having me.
All right. So we are now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. And the seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. So do we have any AA-related announcements?
Thanks, Bob.
Well, this group here is having our quarterly supper and a speaker Monday, November 3rd. We're going to have a potluck at 6 and a speaker at 7. And we have Mike B. all the way up from Penrose, North Carolina coming. So we hope to see you there then. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will home group members please raise their hands? And new folks, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety so that we can welcome you? Marissa?
Welcome.
I'm Ryan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan, welcome.
Welcome.
Michael, welcome.
Thanks, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey,
welcome.
Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Lindsay.
Welcome.
Hey, Josh.
Josh.
Welcome.
All right. Glad to see you all tonight. Thanks. We do have a literature available here. We've got some pamphlets and some packets. So if you're new to AA, please feel free to take one. The books are available for sale. Please see myself or another home group member if you'd like to purchase one. And finally, sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have Debbie and Rick. Please raise your hands. available at the front here. After we close the meeting, please feel free to talk to them. And in closing, thank you guys again, Judy and John. Yeah. After we clean up this evening, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 9. We are going to be going to IHOP, so please come out and join us. And can I get someone to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
I got it.
Ooh!
Shall we?
I'm going to
Our growth is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you. Until then, thank you.
Keeps us sober.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,